This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here in Las Vegas, and today I'm talking with Abby Kearns, Executive Director of Cloud Foundry.
Hello, and good afternoon.
Could you give us a view as to what Cloud Foundry is and what you do?
Well, I am the Executive Director. What that means is I am responsible for Cloud Foundry Foundation. I'm responsible for the open source project that is Cloud Foundry. Cloud Foundry Foundation, for those of you that aren't familiar with open source foundations and why do we have them and what's the point, we protect the IP of Cloud Foundry and ensure that it has a sustainable ecosystem around that and that it continues to grow and flourish. And so we spend a lot of time really reinvesting in that and evaluating how we can make sure that the community is growing and is successful, as well as the ecosystem around Cloud Foundry.
How do you make the balance between the community-led project and those commercial projects where people are taking the code because they have a responsibility to produce code back in? How do you police and monitor all of that?
We encourage a diverse committer base, and that is important because what's the real value of open source? There's two things in my head that are valuable. One, we have a diverse participation. So we have multiple perspectives that are at the table, really helping influence where the technology goes, which is important. The second thing, which is innovating. It really helps ensure that Cloud Foundry continues to be as innovative as possible because we have so many different people participating in that, and that's important for an open source project. One of the things that I believe in, particularly with Cloud Foundry, is that it is only as successful as the commercial distributions are. And having commercially viable products and products that are successful in the marketplace are really going to turn around and make sure that it continues to be a flourishing open source. And I think those both feed off each other and are necessary.
If we look at the difference between the commercial implementations and customer usage versus those people who are taking the community project and doing all the implementation work themselves, is it 85% people using Cloud Foundry through the commercial side and 15% who are taking the raw project, doing all the porting, doing the work themselves? Could you give us a view of the numbers from your side?
I don't know if I can have a quantifiable number. I will say that majority of implementations that we've seen tend to come through a distribution. And I will say that we've seen, because while I am aware of many of those that are pure open source deployments, I only know what people tell me. Maybe there's so many companies that are running this that have never mentioned it, or never spoke up, or never come to an event. And so those we wouldn't necessarily be aware of. But anecdotally, I would say the majority seem to have come through one of the distributions that we have.
Customers, when they're trying to understand platform as a service, are still moving their applications into the cloud. They haven't quite standardized on how they're going to build applications to speed up their whole development cycle. How do we improve people's understanding of what platform as a service is?
That's a tough question. And I actually talked about this recently, is I really don't like the term PaaS, platform as a service, because I feel like it comes with a whole set of misnomers. And so while I acknowledge that that is the market understanding and that's the kind of bucket people need to put it in, is platform as a service, but I think of it more as a cloud application platform. And the reason I think about it that way is it's the platform that enables you to develop applications and run them on the cloud. That is essentially the entirety of the vision of Cloud Foundry, is how do we automate as much as possible, give you the user as consistent an experience to just enable you to quickly and easily deploy applications at speed.
If we look at a lot of customer environments, they have such a range of databases and middleware and developer tools. What we really want them to do is to simplify that so that they can update it once. The developers no longer need to know about all of the underlying layers. How are we doing in terms of that level of education from a cloud perspective?
I would say that it's probably still a very confusing place for many end users, particularly large enterprises that have a tremendous amount of legacy tools, technologies, applications, data. For a company that's 85 years old, there's a large proliferation of technology that they still may have, may be using, and are trying to figure out how to bridge those two worlds. And that's where I think a platform and this other fun technology I like to refer to as the APIs come into play. Because if you have the ability through a platform like Cloud Foundry to write new modern applications that are adapted to the cloud, so cloud native applications, but through what we call our service broker, but essentially it's an API connector back to your legacy application, you have the ability to bridge those two worlds. Because I don't think that there is any path for any company to just abruptly say, all right, brand new stuff tomorrow, let's go. We're going to just ditch everything we've had for the last 20 years, because it's not possible and it's not realistic. I think giving people the ability to slowly move over to modern applications while still taking advantage of the massive amounts of data that they have, that is so amazing. And if you can leverage a cloud, a new application, and take that data and do interesting things with analytics around that, and all of a sudden you've got really interesting mobile apps, or the ability to turn this into a cost savings on logistics because you can operationalize data that you've got sitting around but aren't really taken advantage of. That can be the starting point. And then as you grow and pick up momentum, really turn that into a new way of operating within your business.
Integrating the apps has always been a hugely difficult problem for IT. Apps came along, they required a lot of coding to work together. They needed a lot of coding to just get them set up and running. One of the things cloud brings is it's more configuration environment. You put the applications in place, you configure a few things, and you're suddenly running very quickly. Are you seeing an acceleration in developer world around that? So developers getting this, configuring, running quickly. Are we waiting for operations to come on board and start to drive that? Or are we still waiting for the enterprise per se to just understand there's a better way to do this once he gets past this fact that they no longer need to spend all of that money on consultants to write little bits of code to make it work?
I think there is this whole unknown. And actually, what was interesting is I was talking to someone last night about ROI. And I am super passionate about not giving ROI numbers, as equally passionate as some people are about giving them, because I feel like you don't know what you don't know. One of our users, HCSC, a large health insurer, they went from to do a single app 9 months and 35 developers for one app to running Cloud Foundry and can do an app in 6 weeks with 4 developers. That's a fundamental change to the way you work. And imagine the downstream ramifications of that. You now have developers that are enthusiastic about being able to see their work and iterate on their work quickly and code out the door. And all of a sudden, the business is like, wait, this is exciting. Why don't we add some customer feedback to this and figure out what we should do next? And all of a sudden, they're changing the way they interact with customers. And technology is enabling them to fundamentally change their business, which changes their org structure, which changes the way they think about the way the customer's experience should be inside their organization. And this becomes a fundamental shift. And you start getting a little bit of that and a little bit more, and all of a sudden it becomes an exciting momentum. And what's going to open up that next? Maybe you'll have a handful of developers that come up with some really innovative ideas or applications and suddenly change the entire marketplace. And I think there's no way to quantify that and understand the ramifications when you're fundamentally changing the business and the way they work. I feel like we do them a disservice by selling them short, by saying you're only as good as the next app.
But that acceleration of the developer becomes a challenge in itself. We've simplified a lot of the, you're moving from this version of this database to that version. You're working on this version of this language. That we've got standardized components, so they know they can move from platform to platform to platform. And in a cloud environment, of course, that means they're moving from on-premise to one or many clouds out there, knowing that all of those elements their apps rely on are the same, that they can trust that these things are just there. They no longer have to code for them. But when we speed up, we don't always then pay attention to the little details. Security, for example, testing. We get a bit carried away with the speed of a new app every week. Are you seeing people taking a step backwards? Is there a move in the market for people to say, DevOps sounds really cool and all these new apps, but do we need all the new apps? How do they benefit the business?
You've just described Agile, right? When we say, let's all develop apps, I think when we talk about cross-functional teams or two-pizza teams, what's a two-pizza team? A two-pizza team is essentially a small group of people working together on an application with a product outcome in mind, a business outcome. They're focusing on solving a problem, which is a huge shift from 15 years ago or 20 years ago when I started in tech, where people would buy technology because it sounded cool and then like, all right, let's figure out how to back this into the business. And so as you think about that, you start saying, well, these people are working on a problem to solve. Now, what I do think happens as we pick up this speed and pick up the momentum that a platform can bring, so a platform like Cloud Foundry gives you that consistent experience irrespective of the cloud. So on-prem, Google Cloud, Azure, AWS, it doesn't matter. It gives you that same experience. And it bakes in all of those capabilities into the platform, giving you guardrails. So run fast, But don't run fast with scissors, right? Run fast with, like, some toothpicks. And it gives you the guardrails so that you can move fast. Because when we talk about velocity, what is the one thing you need in order to have velocity? It's consistency. I need to be able to expect what's going to happen next. And so the platform gives you that. Now, what it doesn't give you if you are creating a lot of apps and really doing continuous delivery, it doesn't give you that feedback mechanism. So that's something that the Two Pizza team really brings into the table when you have a product owner who is helping feed those requirements back in, talking to the customer, getting that feedback and iterating on that. Because to your point, you can't do continuous delivery without understanding what you're delivering continuously.
But one of the problems with continuous delivery is we don't have continuous security.
Well, you should.
We don't in a lot of organizations. How do we add continuous security? Should it actually be part of the platform design?
Security is a multi-level, multi-layered thing. It isn't like I'm going to put some IPSs out there and we're done. We're going to run some anti-malware. We're good. No, it's all of those things. It's intrusion detection, intrusion protection. It's anti-malware. It is proactive and reactive layers. And I think those are always continuous and they should always be part of not just the technology, but the way you're executing on that technology.
How does Cloud Foundry expand to incorporate that and bake that whole way of thinking into what people are doing?
First and foremost, it's a platform that highly automates things. What do I mean by that? It means that it does a lot of things for you. You don't get to choose the VM, the container that your app gets deployed to. It chooses it for you. So we're taking human interaction out of the equation. Based on your experience, where do you think majority of these intrusions come from? Human failure, human error. Oh, I typo this, or I opened the wrong firewall, or I closed the wrong firewall, or oops, we fat fingered this thing, and next thing you know, everything's wide open to the internet. So if you have a platform like Cloud Foundry that's like, yeah, you don't get to make those choices. The new containers that are deployed are by default locked down. Or, hey, there is no cross-container communication by default. Or, hey, no one gets to pick the VM and the container that their app is deployed to. It's done for them, so there aren't people choosing where they're going to send things. So they're not trying to SSH it in and fix something. And so that starts removing a lot of layers of challenge that you have that are inherent in the enterprise today in terms of security and compliance. And then you layer on top of that role-based access control and identity management and layering those through with even the services and how those are deployed. You start to have a really solid security and compliance story around where your applications are deployed while still giving freedom to developers to do self-provision and do their own thing.
You talked about highly automated. That requires somebody at some point to create rules. Where do you take the step beyond that and start to introduce machine learning, where it can start to look at what you're doing? It can make those decisions for you. It can best match for you, because with the best will in the world, the moment you've got people designing rules, you have a flaw in the system.
I might take this in a whole philosophical debate on who defines the rules on the AI and are those inherently biased. But it's probably a different podcast.
But I go back to my question. At what point do you start to introduce machine learning AI to do a lot of this?
I think that would be fascinating. I would love to see more of that. I think right now we have algorithms that do the deployments and do the auto resiliency, the auto scale, and the automated checking of the apps, the containers, and the VMs. So that's all built into the platform. But I do think it would be super interesting to just continue to level that up. But right now, when we talk about automation, we try to bake as much of that into the platform. It is automatically continuously checking your app and the state of the container. And if, hey, it's not working, don't worry about that. We're just going to shut that one down and spin up another one. And it really just continues that health check and that health monitoring around your apps, the containers, and the VMs.
You talked about consistency earlier. If we look at OpenStack, it was only in Barcelona that we finally had the ability to deploy to multiple OpenStack distributions with one single script. We still can't port between them because there will be API dependencies and everything else. When we look at the distributions of Cloud Foundry, the commercial and the community ones, how close are we to a consistency level that means I don't have to care whose distribution or whether it's the raw community version? I know I can deploy to it and I will get the consistent same result every time.
Well, we're there now. In fact, we were there end of 2015. We launched this thing at the end of 2015 called Platform Certification. And the sole purpose behind that was to say that when someone is saying they run Cloud Foundry, there is a consistency to that. They haven't forked it and built this whole interesting other things that would lock you into that particular solution. There is a core that is wholesome and true to what is the upstream. And so the platform certification, that label says that I can deploy my app to your platform, your distribution, and potentially deploy another app to a different distribution by retargeting and redeploying. You don't have to rewrite. You don't have to change anything. Just redeploy.
That redeploy is interesting because that implies then I can just pick up an app and just drop it somewhere else, that there are no underlying API dependencies because it's been abstracted out properly. How hard is that to enforce when you're working with commercial companies who, at the end of the day, they all want to find an edge over somebody else. They all want a reason for developers to come to a platform. And the temptation is to add a feature that somebody else doesn't have.
I think you can do that. And I think there is room to differentiate as you move up the stack. But I think when you all, which everyone agrees, the need for an open core and the consistency in that open core, and there's value in that because at the end of the day, they realize their customer is looking for portability. Everyone is looking for freedom from lock-in. Now, granted, we can debate lock-in because there's all different layers of lock-in and there's so many nuances to that. But the ability to redeploy your app is an important one for all of the users of Cloud Foundry. That's what we're offering with Cloud Foundry. And so if I want to deploy my app to IBM Bluemix, but then maybe I want to redeploy it to GE's Predix or Huawei's Fusion Stage or Fujitsu's K5, then I should be able to redeploy and do that and be fine with that, not have to rewrite my app or anything. Right now, where a lot of people are differentiating is through the UI and their marketplaces that are unique to their own distribution.
We've got your annual conference coming up in a couple of months' time.
June 13th through 15th. Be there, be square.
What can people expect to see? What is the next big step you're going to take?
We've actually changed fundamentally our summits for 2017. The one in Santa Clara in June will actually be the first foray in our new format. We have decided to add developer tracks, and specifically language tracks. And we're offering up, when you are a Platinum sponsor, you get your own track. And so Pivotal is sponsoring a Cloud Native Java track. IBM is sponsoring a Node track. And SAP is sponsoring a BI track. And so this allows us to bring in the language communities and the people that are in that world, as well as the offering the opportunity for developers to network and learn from their peers at other companies, not just about how to use Cloud Foundry, but cloud native application architectures and those within their language that they care about. And so we really want to bridge those two worlds together, Cloud Foundry and the power of the developers that are really turning this and making this successful in their organizations.
SUSE now owns all of the HPE assets. That makes it a significant player for you. It makes it a significant player for OpenStack. It was a big player anyway, but it's now projected itself into a bigger sphere. What are you expecting from them in terms of continued push forward? Because the tendency always seems to be you acquire a company, you acquire a load of assets, you become a dominant player. But then companies tend to tone back their investment or their time or their effort. Are you expecting them to continue the level of commitment that is there at the moment? Or do you expect to see a slight change to that?
I expect to see more. SUSE now sits on our board. Thomas DiGiacomo is our board member, the CTO of SUSE. And I am really excited about where they're going to go this year with Cloud Foundry and the commitments they're going to make, both in terms of people and time, but the contributions they're going to pull back in because of their expertise and the breadth of capabilities that they bring to the table. I'm really, really enthusiastic about having them part of our community and looking to see really, really good things from them this year.
You mentioned IBM, Pivotal, and SAP getting their own tracks. No sign of Microsoft coming to this party. No sign of Oracle coming to this party. How are the negotiations going? How are you going to bring those into the fold?
On one of those, you might want to come to Summit because there could be some news about that. I am really enthusiastic about the investments that Microsoft in general is making in cloud and technology. They've obviously invested in Pivotal and have done a lot in terms of the contributions to Cloud Foundry, particularly the Cloud Foundry deployments on Azure. So I think we'll continue to see great things from Microsoft this year. Stay tuned come June to hear more about that. As for Oracle, I don't know. It is a yachting year, so maybe they'll be excited about cloud. I don't know. I just feel like there's always room to bash people, but I feel like where we are right now, the excitement around cloud and cloud-native applications and cloud-native architectures, the pie is just getting bigger. And I think there's plenty of room for everyone to play. And I think there's plenty of room for everyone to push each other because that's where really innovation happens. And I think we're such an exciting time in technology that having some of these big players that bring tons of expertise and developers, this could be a really interesting game.
Abby, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.